Good evening. I'm just going to talk you through a quick overview of the handful of stouts which I've enjoyed during the autumn here. And but tonight I'm actually drinking something a little bit different. And I'm just going to say why this one is sort of interesting, and what conclusions I've drawn from the stouts essentially. So tonight I've actually got something completely different. This is St Austell Brewery from 1851, 4.2% tribute pale ale. And the reason why I chose this one is because I've been reading the book by Camera, The Real Story Behind Britain's Beer, and it's called Cask. And it's very, very involved. There's a lot of scientific stuff, there's a lot of history, but there's a lot of consumer trends which I find massively interesting. And we're talking back, hundreds of years of consumer trends in drinking of all kinds of drinks, non-alcoholic, alcoholic, and the way in which ale, was incredibly important in society. And it started to drop off, mainly running up from the Second World War. And then you've got a lot of sort of keg and pressurized beers coming in, and essentially the smaller brewers got bought up by these great big conglomerates like Watney and Coop, if you can remember them, and Whitbread, and they've all gone out of the window for a good reason, I think. But they just went around the country buying up everything they could, and essentially they got rid of all the decent real ales in the country and just churned out this sort of rubbish, Watney Red Label or something like that. I mean, you wouldn't drink brown label tea, would you? So why would you drink red label, something that pretends to be real ale? And so I think it's only right that those type of brewers should go bust, and they have. Whitbread's still around, but believe it or not, and I was drinking Whitbread beers 30 years ago, and they were one of the biggest brewers, if not the biggest brewer, and you would never have imagined that they would stop brewing beer. They don't brew any beer, they just run things like Premier Inn. So the beer scene has really turned around. The smaller brewers got bought up by six conglomerates, and then there was Guinness. They just wiped out cask ale in Ireland. They wiped everything out. Guinness is, it's just black water. It wasn't even worth me putting into my handful of stouts. If you want to describe Guinness as anything, I would call it an insult in a glass, right? And that's wiped out the beer scene in Ireland. Now, what happened then was, we went through this era in the 60s and 70s of this real garbage, and the cask was sort of giving way to the keg beers, and very slowly lager started to overtake, and the big conglomerates were mainly responsible for this because they had a massive, we're talking, multi-million in the day, campaign to get people onto lager, presumably because it's much, much easier for them to make, and that's very standardized, and they don't have to put any effort into it whatsoever. So lager didn't actually overtake cask ale sales until 1989. And then from then on, you would think it was downhill all the way. But by that time, people were starting to ask, what the heck is going on here? And around the worst time, I mean, there had been thousands of, independent brewers at one time. And at the very worst of the conglomerate era, there was 100 brewers. And over time, that crept up again to 450. But since 1989, with the lager crisis, we now have a healthy 1,800 brewers, microbrewers in Britain. That's good. That's healthy. But you still notice when you go into pub after pub after pub in the same area that you are seeing a lot of the same beers. And one of the ones that I had been seeing until recently almost everywhere was Doombar, and that's almost been taken over now by Timothy Taylor Landlord. Now, why do I want to drink something Cornish or something Yorkshire when I'm in Kent? And what reason would I want to go and visit Cornwall or Yorkshire, when I can drink their beers in Kent. It's not going to cost me the petrol, is it? So this is the crisis that we're at now. We've got rid of the huge conglomerates that just watered everything down, right? They dumbed everything down. We've got lots of microbrewers, but they're not getting where they should be, which is on those pump handles in your local. So what I want to suggest is stop buying the Doom Bar, stop buying the landlord, and insist that they stock something decent and something local and something independent. And this is why. And this is why I bought the Tribute Pale Ale, which I'll tell you about in a second. So towards the end of the book, it's got a little article. It says best-selling UK cask beer brands 2022. And at the top, there's Sharps Doom Bar. And this was after COVID, after all those, you know, billions of gallons of beer were just tipped down the gutters. And, you know, the pubs started to bounce back. And all I wanted to do is to just stock one or two very popular brands. And that's going nowhere fast, because we know where that's going. We've been down that Whitbread Watney route, right? So at the top was Doom Bar. Number two was Landlord. Number three, Green King IPA. I mean, that's just like glue in a glass, isn't it? Fuller's London Pride. It can be good, but they're not independent, right? They're owned by people like Molson Coors, Asahi, you know. And then we've got Green King again, Abbott Ale. That's because the two are stocked side by side. Then we've got at number six, this St. Austell Tribute. Now, Timothy Taylor is said to be independent, but this one is what I would call a true small brewer. So how the heck they got up to number six, I don't know, because I've never seen any on tap in Kent, right? And then we've got things like Wainwright, Marston's Pedigree, Buckcombe Original and Young's London Original. They're all owned by Carlsberg or whatever, you know. So we're back in the old situation, only now it's Asahi, you know, Molson Coors and Carlsberg that own pretty much anything. And if you call Green King an independent, I'm not sure that I do. You know, they're not sitting too pretty, in my opinion. And why do I want a Suffolk Ale like that, you know, in Kent? I don't. I also don't want all Kent pubs to be Shepherd Neame. You know, there's probably, I would say, the two counties that contend for to brewing the most interesting independent beers are Kent and Norfolk. There's just umpteen really decent brewers. But you try and find their beers in the pubs, you know. And I do. I go out and I go out and I go out and I think to myself, that was a Shepherd Neame, it was average, you know, blah, blah, blah. I went to one this week that's a real popular one with me because it's a very, very old pub right next to a church in a medieval citadel village. It's absolutely stunning and it has the most beautiful open half in Kent. And it's got, you know, stuffed wildcats, books. You can just sit there and read books. I was reading about Kent villages, you know, and they always have very, very different beers. One time I went and they had Black Sheep. Okay, it's Yorkshire, but it, you know, they're just guest beers. It's not a permanent. And this time they had Adnams Southwold Bitter and they had Exmoor Wild Wolf 4.2% with juniper. Well, I had a good pint of it and it was a slow pint. It was the slowest pint I've drunk all year. It took me ages to get through it and I can't say I tasted any juniper in there, but you know, if I'd popped a slug of gin in the bottom, well, maybe. Didn't they used to call that a heavy wet? Right, well, let's have a quick look at this St. Austell and then I'll run you through the stouts and why I think they're important and why I made the choices that I did. So, you know, right across the board, we're seeing a lot of changes all the time, but you're the one, you're the consumer who dictates what goes on. And I would suggest try and keep away from those top 10, which, you know, they're just about to take over and then all the microbrewers will go out of business as well. My favourite Kentish microbrewer is called Wantsome. And the next favourite is called Rother Valley, but there's also a new brewer in Rye, and they're producing some interesting brews as well. So I really, you know, if the pub that I go to has got, it's got anywhere between usually one and four pumps, and I will look and I'll choose the smallest, most unknown and localist brewer that I can. You know, that's how I do the preference, you know. So if I'm in a pub and the brewer is like 2 miles away, I'll go for that one, right? And it's got nothing to do with carbon footprint whatsoever. It's got to do with keeping it local and interesting. If I go to Yorkshire, I'm not going to be drinking Kent beer. And if I go to Cornwall, I'm not going to be drinking Kent beer. I want to go to Dorset to drink Dorset beer. That's what I want. Okay. So here's the tribute pale. Remember that got up to number 6. Best selling UK cask. Right, so it's got Cornish gold malt. That's very good. It's a very, very beautiful colour. It's sort of in between wheat and orange. And it's got a mixture of American and British hops. So, yeah, you have got some of that kind of citrus grapefruit, but it is subtle. I would just say there's nothing outstanding about this beer. And that's why I reckon it got into the top 10, because the mass do not want a challenge. The mass want to read their Sun newspaper. They want to flick on the BBC News. They want to watch the footy. They want to do spot the ball competition. And they want that nice little package holiday on a beach somewhere, but not in Britain, right? It's raining. So, you know, this is going to be right up their street. It's a nice beer, but it's got nothing about it that's either outstanding or challenging. Will I drink it again? I'll make an effort to drink it on draft in a pub. But I probably won't buy it in a bottle again. Right. So, the trick is that every beer is either an ale or a lager. And the reason for that is ales use ale yeast and lagers use lager yeast. And we don't want to talk about how badly lager is botched together. So we're going down the real ale route. And we start with pale ale and we work our way up to the blackest beer, which is called stout. Right? And I didn't know a lot about this, right, until I read this book, Cask. I didn't know that stout used to be called stout porter. And that there is no definable difference between a stout and a porter. So that's a good thing to know. But also I didn't realise that what makes the colour in a beer is how roasted the malt is. And that's rather like coffee. If you know anything about roasted coffee beans, you'll know that something like Peruvian or Kenyan coffee is a very pale brown. But when you've got your espresso coffees, they are a very, very dark brown. And it's because they've been roasting a lot longer. And this is exactly what they do with the malt kernels, which they roast in order to ferment, which is what's going to cause the fermentation with the yeast in with the water. And the barley is just, you know, and the hops. Those are the ingredients which start to ferment. So the least roasted is a pale colour, and it's the least roasted which causes the fermentation. The darker the colour of the malt kernels, the less they do, to the point where all they're actually doing is providing a little bit of flavour and a lot of colour. I tried an experiment the other day where I put about a third of a glass of stout in with a Green King IPA. And it turned the Green King IPA black. And that's how powerful the colour in a stout is, right? But essentially, a stout has to have pale ale malt in it for the fermentation to take place. So a stout is, you know, it's both pale and dark. Okay? So what I did was I thought, let's try a handful. So we've got five, well, I don't know how many fingers you got, but we got five stouts, and I did not want anything ordinary, so I just kept well away from Guinness. So I chose Moreland's Old Midnight Hen in their Old Hen, you know, series. 4.2% English stout. Now, I didn't get a bad stout out of them, but there are some very, very different styles. So this one, to my mind, was the most like a good Irish stout. It was very middle of the road. It was absolutely delicious, but it wasn't going towards the chocolate or towards the coffee or towards, you know, any kind of citrus flavours or towards any kind of milk flavours either. So if you want a very good, pretty old-fashioned stout, the Old Midnight Hen was absolutely superb. And then the probably the most sort of flamboyant of them all was the Badger Master Stout Coffee Stout. That was 5%, and that was actually tasted so much of caramel coffee that I described it as banoffee pie, right? So that's not one that I would want very often, but it is a colourful addition to your sort of beer bottle repertoire. And, you know, it's ideal for certain situations. Now, you can find out the absolute details about every one of these stouts in my videos below. I've done a video for each stout, but I'm just giving you an overview here. And then I've got, I went for something a bit different. I went for the Fuller's London Porter. And that was beautiful. I would definitely consider buying that one again. And then I've got the Black Sheep Milk Stout, which, you know, it uses the lactose in the milk to create a very smooth, creamy sort of thing. And that was very, very sort of chocolate and coffee orientated. It was absolutely delicious. I think I described that one as being like a cafe latte. And then I also went for, which I personally, from the very word go, I thought this one was by far the best and the most interesting of them all, and absolutely outstanding, was Sainsbury's Taste the Difference 5% Chocolate Orange Stout. Zesty orange, roasted chocolate, dark malts, and that was from Blandford Forum in Dorset. I would definitely consider having, you know, at least six of those in over the Christmas time, because it's exactly the kind of beer that you want to be drinking with those rich puddings that you go for, you know, or whatever. They would be fine with chocolate cake, chocolates, nuts, dates, all that sort of thing, and Christmas pudding, beautiful, you know, bit of that, you know, all those rich desserts that people have. I mean, I don't bother buying them myself or making them, but, you know, it's beautiful. To me, in a meal, I just have, like, say, chicken and an avocado. That's about it. I might put in some beetroot and rocket or some grated carrot. That's very good for your eyes, grated carrot. I can see in the dark, and if you want to see in the dark, which is a good thing to do if you're drinking all these stouts, do make sure you get at least one good portion of grated carrot a week, but ideally about five portions if you really want to see in the dark, okay? Because it saves batteries on torches and everything. It's a good thing to be able to see in the dark. Right, so yeah, I'm going for that chocolate orange stout. I just want to buy the shop up. That was magnificent. I loved it. But if you don't like the orange, you know, I mean, do you remember them old, it was like in a little red box, the Terry's chocolate orange. If you like that for Christmas, you're going to love this one. It was so roasted. Oh, it was utterly gorgeous. It was like burnt chocolate cake on the edges of a pan, yeah? It was just so good. But it might not appeal to you. Have a look at the stouts I've chosen. Try some others. There's more stouts, say, than there used to be, because there used to be Guinness, and there used to be Murphy's, and there used to be Beamish. Well, what I can make out, they don't make Beamish or Murphy's anymore, and that's why you can't buy them. And when you've had an independent brewer's stout, like one that I had from Norfolk when I was in Suffolk, and then you'd then go to another pub and have a Guinness, my gosh, it is just black water. That is all Guinness is. It's got no flavour, no texture, and that just kind of like annoyingly patronizing creamy foam stuff on the top. It's an absolutely rank, awful product, right? All of these bottles won hands down. I mean, if you try them five bottles, you would never bother drinking Guinness again. But if you go to a pub, and not many of them do a stout, I had a nice one, I think it was a Kentish one, the other week, two Sundays ago now. That was ideal. But, you know, try and get a local brewed stout. I mean, I've always felt that my personal absolutely tip-top stout in Britain that I've ever tasted is the Wye Valley double stout. Now, that is just really, really perfect. But if you like a beer that's got a little bit extra, so you want a pale ale that tastes of grapefruit, or you want a stout that tastes of orange, you know, well, try a chocolate orange one, huh? And of course you've got, you know, I don't know if they still make it, but Young's used to do a double chocolate. And I think the double chocolate came from a chocolate malt that they used. And they also put actual chocolate into the... That was so beautiful and creamy. And I haven't seen that for a long time. But when I was in Suffolk, there was a comparable product on draft in one of the pubs. So get out there a bit in the winter and see what you can see. You know, to my mind, the darker the night, the darker the beer. That's why it's a bit weird, right? Drinking pale ale, you know, at this time of year. But I do mix it up quite a lot. Anyway, I mean, I don't mix them up in the same glass. Well, unless it's just an experiment, you know. You try mixing stout with anything you like and you'll just get a black beer. That's very, very interesting. Now, you might say that's a bit odd mixing beers, but years and years ago, and I'm talking before the First World War, you'd have something like light and mild or dark and mild, or, you know, they constantly would give you a pint that was half a pint of one and half a pint of another. And even in, the last, say, don't know, 30 years, say, I remember going to a old coal miners' working man's club, and the guy there would have a bottle of man's brown ale, and then he'd have it topped up with the bitter, whatever the bitter was. So it was Tetley. I mean, that's another one you never see. You never see flowers. You never see, you know, courage. You just don't see these anymore. And it's to do with, you know, it's to do with, quite frankly, consumer rollover. Their beers and the pubs tend to go on the trend that the consumers take them on. And so what I want is I want a lot more wantsum. I want a lot more wantsum in Kent. So, you know, you do have influence, you do have footprint, you do make a difference. And I'm not a person who will never, ever buy a pint of lager in a pub. But the other day I was offered Shepherd Neame Master Brew, which is one of those beers that just tastes of absolutely nothing. It's sort of like tea that's had cardboard in it for some considerable time. Or I could have, you know, a Hurley Man Lager. So I had the Hurley Man Lager. Years ago, Shepherd Neame used to do Orangey Boom Lager. Now that really is a nice one. And if you get something that's really quite decent, well, drink it from time to time, you know. But yeah, just be aware that lager and ale are two sides of a fence, but all of the cask ales are ale. So I used to think there was a difference between beer and ale, or bitter and IPA. There isn't. They're all ale. They all contain, ideally, water, malted barley, yeast and hops. An increasing number these days contain wheat, and I don't really want to be drinking a beer that's got wheat in it if I can avoid it. That's just a personal taste. You know, if I want wheat, I'll go for Weetabix or something like that. And I don't eat Weetabix, so why would I want wheat in my beers, you know? And increasingly, you'll find that bottled beers are containing glucose syrup. So anything that comes out of Shepherd Neame, anything that comes out of Burton-on-Trent, has probably got glucose syrup in it. Well, you know, probably it cuts their costs. But frankly, if I want glucose syrup, I could probably just boil up a bit of sugar, couldn't I? You know, I don't want it in my beer, right? So Have a look at the back of the bottles all the time. Don't be afraid to ask for an ingredients list in the pub. They probably won't give you one, but it's a food product, believe it or not, and they should be able to provide at least a list of allergens. They should be able to. So, you know, just be aware of what you're putting in your stomach. Get yourself Cosk, Desdemore, the camera guide. It's very technical for about two chapters, but bear with it or leave those chapters out and get into the meaty part of it. You're going to learn a heck of a lot and you're going to appreciate your drinking on a whole new level, I promise you. So what is my sort of knock around with the stouts? Well, I remember a long time ago when I was a student, I really, really liked Murphy's, but I haven't seen that for years, you know. So go and have a look, see what else is around. I've had most of these before. I haven't had the Old Midnight Hen. That was all right. I've had the Milk Stout, the Coffee Stout, and the London Porter once or twice. But this Chocolate Orange Stout is amazing. Yeah, so I think essentially, whatever kind of beer drinker you are, you ought to be getting three or four pints of stout, you know, under your belt at least once a year, because it's all about the big brewing tradition of who we are in Britain. I mean, you name me one other country in the world that really does ale like we do, you know, you're going to be hard pushed. I don't think even America does it. They do, you know, IPAs and all that, but it's not like we do it. We're the experts. And our ales used to be so rugged, that's why they're called India Pale Ales. They put them in these huge wooden casks and they put them on board ship, and the beers would mature amazingly as they went round the tip of the bottom of Africa and off to India, because, you know, there was a huge number of British people wanting to drink English IPA, India Pale Ale, in India. So they actually imported the ales, which made some of the brewers very, very rich indeed. And don't forget, there was no Suez Canal, so they went by sailing ship in the hold. They, you know, they were great because you got a lot of ballast in the ship and it's not going to roll as much. So, you know, as long as you don't tap the barrel and drink too much, you won't roll as much. But yeah, so I've had a fantastic summer and autumn getting out and about locally and sourcing a lot of new pubs, just going up new lanes I didn't know existed, finding pubs. And I want to suggest you get out and do the same. You know, if you're always just knocking around the corner to the local, well, you know, it's a bit like being at a chicken, isn't it? In a, well, they call it a battery cage. You know, or you could be a chicken that just lives in a barn. You could be a chicken that's free range. So you could just be a fecking pheasant. Just fecking go where you want to and stuff everybody and see what there is out there. But not before you've tried this Sainsbury's Chocolate Orange Stout. Now, that really was something else. I thought that was a top quality product. Loads of attention to detail. Dead to go out on a limb. And it made my fecking night, it did.